may have gathered, we're in the middle of some important conversations that have been going on a while, but particularly this weekend, about what it means to offer a Spanish language liturgy in a majority English-speaking parish. There's one more opportunity to join that conversation later this morning. What we're attempting here has rarely been tried. What we tend to see in the Episcopal Church are either independent Spanish-speaking congregations that often take on the character of their priest, so an Ecuadorian priest would have a largely Ecuadorian congregation, likewise Mexican or Salvadorian, etc. There are a few success stories of majority English-speaking congregations consciously choosing to give themselves over to becoming majority Spanish-speaking as their neighborhoods change, some in this diocese. And there are a number of models, of which we have been one in recent years, since the diocese put its funding into places where people actually live, and St. Albans picked up this nascent congregation. I think of this as the adjunct model, in which a majority English-speaking congregation hosts a Spanish-speaking congregation with various models for providing liturgical leadership and pastoral care. And these adjunct congregations tend to be vulnerable to all kinds of threat, usually coming down to numbers of people and the cost of providing leadership in a model in which the Spanish speakers are understood as part of the majority's missionary outreach. That's been true here at St. Albans in many respects, with the effect that from time to time our leadership, particularly in tighter times, have contemplated asking San Albano, the name indicating a quasi-separate congregation, asking them to leave. We're determined to try something different for a population that in this time and in this age and in this country is vulnerable enough. We're trying to try something different, and it will require adjustments in attitude for every one of us as we navigate what it means to be one congregation worshiping in two languages. Let me be clear, that doesn't mean we're having bilingual services all the time. As Steve Carlson and Yuri Rodriguez have told us this weekend, nobody really likes that. You have to do that from time to time, but nobody really likes that. And this service is not going to suddenly become half Spanish. We'll continue, at least in the foreseeable future, with the pattern of worship that we have. But those Spanish speakers who were basically happy with the old model, and whose real relationship was with Debbie Kirk, known to most of you as a talented leader of that congregation, they've left us, and we're starting anew with a smaller group who have chosen to stay, and with a few newcomers who have joined over the summer. The big change that will be required of us is that we will have to address our largely unconscious assumptions that many, but not all of us, carry as a result of what is often termed privilege, or even white privilege. The reality of offering a Spanish language liturgy for people who are fully members of St. Albans and who prefer to pray in Spanish means that they are now us, and we are in ministry together. And there'll be technical pieces that will have to be addressed, such as ensuring that all our communications are in both languages. Perhaps even more important will be giving the same kind of attention to that liturgy as we give to all of our other liturgies. Even more challenging, perhaps, we're realizing that the summer schedule, where we all tend to like 10 o'clock, we can't do 10 o'clock and have strawberries afterwards. We're excluding a significant part of our congregation. So we'll have to look at 9 and in English and 11:15 in Spanish in the summer so that they can worship in the cool or even chill air in here. Those are technical things. The more difficult things are dealing with our own level of discomfort or even anxiety as long-time patterns have to change. It's spiritual work that goes along with fully embracing those who prefer to worship in Spanish. And for help with that spiritual work, we can turn to today's reading from Luke. In one reading of this passage, we have to see how fundamental a change in society Jesus is instituting when he heals these lepers. The lepers were all marginalized and effectively excluded from the society of the majority. They kept their distance, even from Jesus. But one of them was even marginalized within this marginal group because he was Samaritan. And there might be an unconscious assumption there. Do you suppose that all of the lepers were otherwise men? what happened to these 10 lepers, all of them, is that they were made clean. And the effect of this was that they had to go and show themselves to the authorities who would declare them clean so that they could then return to their family and to their society. But this Samaritan, who might or might not have gone to his Samaritan authorities, returns to prostrate himself at Jesus' feet and thank him. In effect, he recognizes Jesus as his authority and is told that his faith has made him well. This word well is different from made clean. It's more like cured. It's more like saved. All were cleansed, but the Samaritan, the foreigner, the one outside of the mainstream, one who believed that true worship happened at Mount Gerizim rather than Mount Moriah, today known as the Temple Mount, this one is the one who was made well. In a way, Jesus is demonstrating here that what both Jews and Samaritans have to learn, and us probably as well, is that what we looked for in a place of worship, namely the assurance of the presence of Yahweh in their midst, they now look for in relation to him. The Samaritan got it, and so was not merely cleansed, but healed, saved, made well. The other 9 didn't do anything wrong, but somehow missed the fullness of grace because they effectively ignored the foreigner in their midst. What if they had been able to see the Samaritan differently? What if their leprosy had allowed a measure, just a measure of common cause in which they went together to their respective priests and all returned to give thanks to Jesus? What if they grasped that their salvation was bound up with one another, with recognizing, accepting, and even appreciating their common humanity rather than simply returning to the comfort of their majority position and leaving this 10th leper as a cleansed outsider? It's not so much they did anything wrong. It's more they didn't examine their assumptions about how their world works. And so in missing that, they missed the fullness of salvation that was available to them in relation with Jesus. Now, I don't claim to know everything about what it will mean for us to think differently about people who worship in Spanish, prefer to worship in Spanish in our midst. But every intuition and all that we've heard this weekend from Steve Carlson and Yuri Rodriguez suggests that it will be a means for us of blessing, a means for us to live ever more fully into the promises of the gospel, and a chance to hear that our faith is making us well beyond being made clean. Now, in our customary time of silence, as ever, use it as you will. Perhaps see if any of what I've said today gives you cause for anxiety. I know that I have anxiety about embarking on something without complete clarity about what it will mean for us. And what I will do with that is in prayer attempt to return to Jesus and give thanks, remembering what is really important, remembering the message of this Samaritan leper, and trying to live out of that. I'll also, as you know, I've told you before, when I get anxious, I find making a gift is a good antidote, and so I'll also increase my giving. I'll also increase my pledge, because I know that helps me deal with my anxiety as well. How about you? What's going on with you? In silence and in response to the gospel, let us pray.